I know more about sports than you, good sir.
Tis to laugh. Dare I say my grandmother could outsport you any day of the week.
Gentlemen, may I borrow your ear for a moment?
But of course!
BetDSI.net is an awesome site where you can play for free and win real cash. Are you a sports nut with a lot of confidence?
Thoroughly.
Maybe you're a casual fan with a flair for the stats.
Guilty!
Put your knowledge to the test and win real cash at BetDSI.net. It's fun, it's entertaining, and it's just another way to enjoy the sport you already love. It's BetDSI.net.
Huzzah!
Is it a coincidence that Jeff Blair has covered two perfect games? Or should Dennis Martinez and David Cohn be giving him the full credit he deserves? This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
He's a great player. I mean, you're not going to stop a kid like that. I thought it's a five-man job. I thought Kyle and Corey did a good job of tag-teaming he and McCollum. Mm-hmm. I think they're one of the top tandems along with our guys in the league. And I thought they did it. Corey and Kyle did a good job of corralling him, keeping him in.
Anytime is a good time to play a little Earth, Wind, and Fire. Paul Jones tweeted out last night that he gave props to the Portland Trail Blazers game ops for running out Little Earth, Wind, and Fire. Of course, Maurice White, who was the leader of Earth, Wind, and Fire and a singer, and he actually co-wrote that song, Shining Star, passed away recently. Passed away yesterday at the age of 74, so... as Paul Jones said, props to the Portland Trail Blazers game ops staff for running out a little Earth, Wind, and Fire, which is, I mean, that is just like so prototypical and 70s and 80s music. That's like the decade personified right there. The Raptors went on to win that game. 110-93 over the Portland Trail Blazers. Seldom an easy place to play for the Raptors. In point of fact, they'd lost their seven previous games in Portland. It was a battle of the backcourt. C.J. McCollum, Damian Lillard against Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. And as is usually the case these days, the Toronto Raptors came out in front. Michael Grange is our Sportsnet columnist. He joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Michael, that's... we talked to Eric Smith about this yesterday. It's typically a hard arena for a lot of teams to play in, isn't it? It's a pretty loud arena. It's a pretty good crowd. And the Trailblazers themselves, they've always been a handful at home for the Raptors.
Yeah, I mean, they've always been a pretty good team. And the Rose Garden is one of those arenas. It's funny, when people really began paying attention to the ACC over the past couple of years, certainly that first playoff series or most, you know, against Brooklyn and again last year against the Wizards, you know, the venues that it was being compared to were the Rose Garden was right at the top of the list, Oracle Arena in Oakland with Golden State, and you know, the heyday of the Utah Jazz, you know, as places where the crowd really is a factor and completely behind and all of that. So you know, I think the Raptors going in there in those circumstances, and really, you know, I think the thing that impressed me about that game is you never quite, almost like literally from when the ball went up, there just seemed to be a very business-like approach,
mm-hmm.
very aggressive. They took control of the game. You know, it was never a blowout, but you just never got that sense that, you know, they were going to let this one get away from them. And, you know, I it was just like a really professional win. You know, again, third game of a road trip, and all these a little bit shorthanded, and all these other kind of, you know, not so much excuses but factors.
Right.
And they accepted none of them.
You know what I like about these past two games is, and we've talked about this. Everybody talks about this. The NBA is it's a league of runs, and somebody's. If especially a team with good guard play, at some point they're going to go off in a run. And in the past two games, and we saw it again last night, I mean, the Raptors, teams have taken a run at the Raptors. In this case, there was what it was a 10-0 or 8-0 run by Portland down the stretch. A shot is missed, and I mean the Raptors put it away with free throws. Now that I mean, by my count, they have withstood runs in a lot of their these past 14 games or whatever. And that to me is that's one of the things I think a coach really wants to see, because typically when you're able to do that, it means that at some point your defense has clicked in, even if it hasn't been great all game. At some point, your defense has clicked in.
Yeah, I think that's a good observation. And, you know, the nitpicker in, you know, a lot of us might say that part of the Raptors issue or their one thing that they haven't got done a lot in the past, you know, this streak they've been on is put teams away and keep them away. You know, they just seem to be playing with 8 or 10 or 12 point leads for long, long stretches of the game. And if they ever do get it up to 18 or 20, they let the other team back in, or else they, you know, as was more the case last night, they just never quite were able to extend that lead. And the positive is that, you know, they've never let the other team really gain control, and they've done just as you said, Jeff, is they've sort of kind of held them at bay. But, you know, a bit of a negative is guys really piled up some minutes, Kyle Lowry in particular. And, you know, that's kind of the little red flag out there is, you know, it would be great if going into the All-Star break, these guys were actually going to have a break. And you wouldn't worry quite so much. But the All-Star break could end up being a pretty busy time for DeRozan and Lowry and just with it being in their hometown and all the kind of socializing, you know, like they should enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
That'll go on. So, but I mean,
well, they're going to be in some ways, they're almost the guides for a lot of the guys, aren't they? You know, they're the guy, yeah. Hey, you know, go for dinner, whatever. I mean, I know the NBA
family,
lifestyle,
you know, they've got, you know, yeah, they're sort of the hosts and
yeah.
Listen, they're pros. They know what's going on and it's not like they're our age, Jeff, having a good time on a weekend sets us back for a month.
Right. A month.
They'll be fine. But I mean, the bigger picture is this team is playing really good basketball. And apart from that one little hiccup in Denver, they've it's kind of hard to, you're really casting about for pretty minor. You really are nitpicking when you try and come up with something to be worried about or something to be critical of.
Well, no, but the minutes, Mike, look, that's a good point because we all know what happened last year and different minutes for Kyle Lowry in particular this year because Corey Joseph's there. So the different minutes than Kyle Lowry was playing last year. But if you are Dwayne Casey, and Dwayne Casey's in his post-game news conferences after just about every one of these past five games has kind of talked about, wish I could get these guys some, you know, a little more time off. But, you know, when, as you say, when you're leading by 8 points, 7 points, 10 points, you can't shut everybody down and give them that nice sit down for the last 10 minutes of the game and just relax. You can't do that. How do you think Dwayne Casey goes about handling this, if in fact this is the way it's going to be? Like if in another 3 weeks or a month, if we're still talking about, man, he hasn't been able to get Kyle or DeMar, a few minutes here and there, how does he end up handling it?
Well, they have a 5.5 game lead on third right now. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
so you could throw a game. I don't want to say throw a game,
exactly. That can disappear quickly.
Okay.
But, you know, it does give them a little bit of a cushion. And I think really they, you know, it's kind of been a good thing in a way that Norm Powell's been able to find his way into the lineup with James Johnson hurt and, of course, DeMar Carroll hurt. It gives you get a little flavor for what he can contribute in the meaningful minutes against first-unit guys, playing with first-unit guys. And I think the next guy that needs to get a little bit of taste of that is DeLon Wright, only for the fact that you know, right now point guard is a position of strength for the Raptors, with obviously Lowry and Corey Joseph. But that's a sprained ankle or a sore hamstring away from being a weakness.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't have that next layer of you know, I think in a perfect situation, we were talking to Dwayne Casey on Primetime a couple of days ago, and he acknowledged, you know, like it would be nice if you had that security blanket of a John Lucas III, like a guy who's played, you know, a couple of 100, 300, 400 NBA games. And no, you're not going to turn to him as a starter or even long minutes. But, you know, if either Corey Joseph ends up a little hurt or Kyle ends up a little hurt, you know, you have a guy who's run an NBA team who can fill in for 15 minutes a night. Delonte Wright might be that guy, but just the way this team has kind of been run, and as we've talked about, you just haven't had those kind of blowout games that you could run them out there and not worry. You don't know exactly what you've got, and you've seen him in the D League, and he's been spectacular. But that's not the NBA. So I think that would be one area. If I was Dwayne Casey, if I was Masai Ujiri, it'd be like, as a point of emphasis, look, let's get this guy 6 or 8 or 10 minutes,
mm-hmm.
You know, not in garbage time. Let's get him a 4-minute run, 6-minute run in the first half. Let's get him 4 or 6 minutes in the second half, you know, with first unit guys again, and see what he can do and get him his confidence. Just because I think you want to have, again, you're fine tuning at this point with a team that, you know, they're on pace for like 55, 56 wins, but you just don't want to leave anything to chance. So that's one little thing that I would look at if I was Dwayne Casey. It would let you know what you have. It would be a little easier in that context to take Kyle's minutes down from, say, 39 or 40, which he's been doing too often the last few weeks, get him down that 34, 35 range.
I was going to say, Mike, that's really what we're talking about, isn't it? We're talking about, in the case of Kyle, we're talking about 4, 5, 6 minutes a game, right? Basically.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, you know, I don't think there's any scenario where he does the Golden State thing or the San Antonio thing and you get him down to like 31 minutes a night. I mean, I don't think he would want that. And, you know, I don't think it's necessary, but it is, you know, I think you do want to get out of the habit. And Casey Quinn's been very upfront about that. You want to get out of the habit of playing at 40, 41 minutes because, you know, it's a 10-point game and has been since the first quarter. So I think that's what you're looking at. And also, as I said, if DeLon Wright can get his feet wet, gain some confidence, and gain the confidence of Casey, then, you know, you're not in such, you know, as you head into the trade deadline, maybe, you know, you don't go shopping around for that, you know, maybe overpaying at this stage for a guy who's really going to be your third point guard.
What's been your read on Norm Powell's games, the first couple of games that he's played? What's been your read on him?
You know, offensively challenged, you know, like that was the book on him coming in. Like I think in college and certainly in the D League, he can absolutely overpower guys. Like he's a specimen physically and it's, you know, just fearless in terms of attacking and all of that. But, you know, there's a bit of subtlety to that he's got to work on. He's not a great shooter at all, although his numbers have improved. Certainly again, in the D League, he's put up better numbers than he projected out of UCLA. But he's, you know, and defensively he's absolutely eager, you know, like he is, he gets into guys' chests. He's so strong that they feel him. But you know, NBA players are so smart, they can take advantage of that. So your over aggression becomes an opportunity for them to run a counter on you or whatever it might be. So, but all of, you know, those are good problems, you know, like it's not a case of dialing that guy up. It's sometimes maybe pulling him back a little bit. More, he's a very intelligent guy, and you know, so I think more reps will is all that's really going to stand between him and being a really good, I mean, talking elite NBA defender. And then if he can kind of learn to play off the ball really effectively, which is not easy, right? Like, I mean, he's probably played his whole career on the ball, dominating the ball. You know, just dictating what he wants to do when he wants to do it offensively. All of a sudden, it's like he's ninth option, you mm-hmm. know. And you know, so if he can learn how to do that, then you know he can help. And I think it says a lot that, you know, in this context, they've decided that they'd rather start him and keep the second unit intact. So I think it speaks to the confidence the coaching staff has in him.
The All-Star game is here next weekend, obviously. Kyle Lowry's taking part in the three-point shooting contest. Did you think DeMar might go into the dunk competition? Did part of you think that that might be a possibility?
Never, not once.
Okay. All right.
I did an interview with DeMar a couple of weeks ago, and it was in the context of how he's really, like last year when he was injured, he's always been a student of the game and all of
sure.
that, but he really took the opportunity to kind of, study the game in a different way. And when he came back and got up to speed the last 6 weeks of the season last year, you saw very much what you've seen all year this year, this kind of more measured approach who really, he's thinking two steps ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting when I talked to him was this guy's been the best athlete on any court he's ever been on since literally probably grade three, right?
Yeah.
And that has been a blessing and a curse, right? Like, it was the reason he was one and done out of USC. It's why he got drafted as high as he did. But he would admit that because he could get by on that athleticism, he skipped a lot of steps in terms of his development. And it speaks a lot to him and, pardon me, that he's been able to fill in all those gaps and now you have the player you have. But, he said, you have that label, just a dunker. I hated that label. And he loves the fact that now he's known as crafty,
mm-hmm.
smart,
professional, the professional DeMar
right.
DeRozan.
Because that's earned, right?
Like, sure.
That's taken a lot of time and effort and dedication and to be recognized for that. So, I think part of it is he's not that he's old, but he's 26, 27. So he's not going to go and run and try and, risk a groin injury, whatever, in a dunk contest. But also, it's a point of pride, right? Like he wants other parts of his game, and is happy that other parts of his game are being recognized beyond just his athleticism. So for a couple of different reasons, I would have never predicted that he'd be in the dunk contest.
Mr. Grange, I appreciate you doing this. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jeff. Take care.
Michael Grange, Sportsnet. Again, the Raptors and Pistons, Monday night, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 1. Pre-game at 7, tip-off just after 7:30 on 590 and Sportsnet 1. Want to talk about DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry, the minutes that they're logging. And as we said, we've got the All-Star weekend coming up, and they're going to be front and center. Kyle Lowry's taking part in the three-point competition, which... I want to throw this out there because I'm one of those people. I mean, I'm one of those rare people who admit to actually liking All-Star games. Only the NBA game and Major League Baseball All-Star game. The others I could do without. Although, as I said earlier this week, the 3-on-3 got my attention. The 3-on-3 got my attention in the NHL All-Star game. Pro Bowl could break out in my bathroom and I wouldn't watch it. But you've got the dunk contest. And you got the three-point shooting contest. And I would argue that the three-point contest has become a lot sexier in the past couple of years in the dunk competition. Now, part of that is the way the game has gone. A lot of it has to do with the fact that it's Steph Curry. And seriously, people would pay good money to watch Steph Curry tie up his sneakers. I mean, he is an athlete that we literally cannot get enough of. So I want to ask this question. Maybe you're going to the All-Star game. You're going to be watching it. But is it just me, or does the three-point competition, is that actually more interesting than the dunk competition? And I know we're talking about exhibitions, but I can remember a time where people stopped to watch the dunk competition. Right? I can remember people who wouldn't watch a minute of a regular season game, let alone an All-Star game, would tune in to watch the dunk competition. Back in the day, right? The day with Michael, players of that nature. And it was kind of cool because you always had somebody come up and challenge the big dog. There was always somebody in there, some athlete. And a lot of times it was guys, you wouldn't want the ball in their hands in the final 2 minutes of a game for all the money in the world. some guy would come out and they would just be lights out in the slam dunk competition. Now, though, I think we're probably a little more about the three-point shot than we are about the slam dunk competition. So, going to throw out those numbers, but I forgot we got an early break. Ross Atkins is joining us. You know what? Forget it. We'll talk about it some other time. I forgot we had an early break. I thought we had 7 minutes left. Anyhow, to take us into that break, the Blue Jays, as we said, Ross Atkins will join us. They have signed right-handed pitcher David Aardsma to a minor league contract with an invitation to spring training. The Jays have not yet formally announced that they've signed Gavin Floyd, similar deal. We'll talk to Ross Atkins about that. Aardsma, 34, appeared in 33 games for Atlanta last season. It was 1-1 of the 4.70 ERA. He's been around for 9 years. And this is from my producer, Travis McKenzie. If he makes the team, this is dumb. If he makes the team, he would be the first on the alphabetical list of all Blue Jays players, topping Jeremy Accardo. Why do I need to know that? He's first in the all-time MLB list, topping Hank Aaron. So there you go. So at least there's one thing David Aardsma's the first of. Right-handed pitcher David Aardsma signed to a minor league contract with an invitation to spring training. Let me give you the rundown of Scotiabank Hockey Day in Canada before I forget, because the next hour we've got a bunch of people coming on. It is tomorrow. It's hosted by Ron McLean from Kamloops, BC. Special guests include Don Cherry, Wendell Clark, Corey Cross, Corey Hirsch, Trevor Linden, Lanny McDonald, Kirk McLean, Mark Napier, Wade Redden, and Darcy Tucker. Coverage begins at noon from Kamloops on CBC and Sportsnet. CBC and Sportsnet at 2 p.m. We'll have the Oilers at the Canadiens. That's with Bob Cole doing the duties. And afternoon game in Montreal. Man, if the Canadiens lose that one, they'll be held to pay. And after that game, coverage will continue from Kamloops at 5 p.m. and CBC and Sportsnet with Hockey Central Saturday. We'll be on at 6:30 p.m. Strombo, Friedman, Rudy, Kiprios, Leeson, Senators, 7 o'clock on CBC and Sportsnet. That is also available in 4K, by the way, on channel 999 if you have a 4K TV and a Rogers Nextbox 4K. Why is Nextbox so hard for me to say? Penguins and Panthers at 7 p.m. in City. Flames and Knuckleheads at 10 p.m. in CBC. Jetties and Avalanche at 10 p.m. in Sportsnet. Hockey Central postgame at 1 a.m. on CBC. So there you go. All the hockey you can shake a hockey stick at on Saturday as part of our Scotiabank Hockey Day in Canada presentation. Ross Atkins, the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, Mark Shapiro, president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays and the Rogers Centre, faced Blue Jays season's ticket holders last night at the leadoff season's ticket holder fan forum. In the past, I believe this event usually attracts around 900. The Jays were saying there were about 2,000 people there last night. It looked a lot more to me. There were a lot of people sitting in the stands in addition to the flooring. You know, we've talked a lot about Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins and trying to turn the page from Alex Anthopoulos. I think in a lot of ways we saw a little bit of that last night. To me, what the fan forum signifies more than anything else is, okay, now we're really in the buildup, the spring training. Pitchers and catchers report, well, a lot of guys are down there already. We had Chris Colabello yesterday. He was on his way to hit in Dunedin. A lot of guys are already down there, but we've got 3 weeks left for pitchers and catchers to report. The games start very soon. And I think the fan forum is kind of, that to me at least, is when, you know, most of the contracts are signed, most of the lifting's done. This is the team you have. We're getting ready to go into spring training. Still a little bit of work, I think, for the Blue Jays. Something happened in the last 48 hours, and we'll talk to Ross Atkins about this. At some point in the last 48 hours, I think most Blue Jays fans started to believe that the team not only might be able to sign Jose Bautista, but I think skeptics out there are beginning to think that perhaps there is a way to come to a long-term contractual agreement with Josh Donaldson. So we've got a lot of questions for Ross Atkins. That's why he's coming on the Jeff Blair Show when we return on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. And listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on Demand. Now more of The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Stones are on tour, not coming to Toronto. The closest they're coming to is Buffalo. And I ain't going to go to Buffalo to watch a concert, I'm sorry. But I wasn't all that beaten up about it. I mean, I've seen the Stones before. Then I find out that they're actually playing She's a Rainbow on this tour for like the first time in almost two decades. I have no idea why they decided to drag it out. It's a great song. It's one of my favorite Stones songs. But they just, for the longest time, they just didn't bother playing it. So there you go. They're playing it. It's part of the set list on this tour. And they're not coming to Toronto. Such is life. The Toronto Blue Jays made an announcement today. They've signed right-handed pitcher David Aardsma to a minor league contract with an invitation to spring training. He's 34 years old, appeared in 33 games for Atlanta last season, had a 4.70 ERA out of the bullpen. He's been around the majors for 9 years. Not announced yet, and we'll ask Ross Atkins why. Multiple reports that Gavin Floyd has agreed to a minor league contract with the Blue Jays as well. Gavin Floyd had a little bit of action with the Cleveland Indians last year, still recovering from an elbow injury. He's a guy who... Well, we've talked a lot about the need for organizational depth when it comes to pitching, and he's a guy that would certainly appear to be a candidate to help out in that area, and maybe, I don't know, maybe a candidate to make the team as a long reliever. Ross Atkins is the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. He and Mark Shapiro faced their season's ticket holders last night, and Ross Atkins joins us in the Jeff Blair Show. That went pretty well, I thought, didn't it?
Yeah. Jeff, are you asking me, Ross?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it went pretty well.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
No problem.
Yeah, you know what? The fans were great. Great turnout. Great to see that energy. I think Kevin being there, that's the highlight, man. You know, you bring somebody with that energy into that environment, and it just changes the tone, the atmosphere, and reminds us all that this game's about the players. And ultimately, the fun part is when, we're watching guys run around on the diamond. So, and that just takes us a little bit closer to it, hearing from Kevin and Gibby. But yeah, great energy. Every interaction I had with every fan was authentic, genuine, just focused on winning, focused on this year, and really was a great night. I enjoyed it.
Hey, when do you, as a general manager, start really focusing on spring training? Because I made the point that this event, and I've gone to Ross, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 of them. It always seems to me to be, it's almost the end of the off season. It's when people start getting sort of ginned up for spring training. There's still a few, issues with contracts and all that. But by and large, I think the fans start using this almost as a leadoff point. When do you start going into a spring training mindset, if there is such a thing?
Well, there's kind of two ways to answer that. One is, you're always thinking about things in life, not just in baseball, but in any business and any management position. You're always trying to think of things on a quarterly basis and 4 months out, 1 year out. You want to stay way ahead of the game. So, typically you're thinking about spring training 4 months prior to spring training, mm-hmm. as you're building out your depth. And in my case, I've been here for 2 months, so I would be lying if I said I was thinking about the Blue Jays spring training for 4 months. But obviously, it's been unique here this year for me. But when you really get into that, answering it more directly, just going into that mindset, I think that's about right now. I'm having conversations with GMs and managers that are already there. So now you're shifting over in towards, okay, we're closer to knowing what our team is going to look like. We're closer to thinking about getting guys prepared for day one. And that's when a lot of your energy shifts towards, okay, what decisions do we have in spring training? How do we best prepare the players for those decisions? What goals do we have for them short-term and long-term? And how do we articulate those to them in a way that is including them in the process, asking them how we can help them, and put the players in the best frame of mind to be great? So, you know, I think from a preparation standpoint, you're 4 months out, but fully going into the mode of, okay, opening day's around the corner. That's today. That's yesterday. I talked to two GMs yesterday that were already at spring training.
Ross, the team has announced that David Ardsma has been signed to a minor league contract. Can you confirm, is Gavin Floyd signed?
So I'm not going to comment on any deal until it's done.
Okay.
We're certainly interested in Gavin and are hopeful he would be an interesting piece to add to our team.
All right.
As Gavin has a great set of experiences.
Mm-hmm. And if he were, and I'll ask you about Ardsma in a minute, but I mean, would he be a candidate for the bullpen, or are you looking at him as perhaps a starter in the minors? I know he had the elbow injury. I know he was with you guys in Cleveland last year, made a couple of appearances out of the bullpen. Would he be viewed as a reliever if, in fact, he were to sign here?
I think if we're able to get him here, he could do either. And
okay,
That's what's interesting. I think, it'll be interesting to see where he is once he gets ramped up into spring training. If it's here, great. But it really, time will tell, because he hasn't pitched in a while.
Mm-hmm. All right, and as for David Ardsma, a veteran arm, 33 games for the Braves last year, a known commodity, I would say.
Yeah, man. You guys said it well at the start of the show. When you can get a guy like that on a non-roster deal, non-guarantee, that has those set of experiences, every year there's anywhere from 5 to 10 of those stories of guys that don't have a contract come into spring training and end up the next year getting guaranteed 2 and 3. Scott Kazmir, Blanton, mm-hmm. These guys that you have to have reason and rationale to believe that's going to happen, to commit to them. You don't want to just take flyer after flyer, because then, you don't have the best opportunity if those numbers get too great. So you find out where the rationale and reasons that you have to believe that those chances are higher for others. And that's when you commit those spots, in my view.
You know, Ross, one of the things we've seen in the past couple of years, we certainly saw this year, is middle relievers getting multi-year contracts. Guys who in the past might have been in on a one-year deal or brought in a minor league invite, suddenly now these guys are, the Tony Sipps of the world. And I'm not casting aspersions on Tony Sipp, but you've got guys who are middle relievers, even specialists, getting 3 years and $18 million. Does that make it harder for you as a GM to kind of build a bullpen, to look for value amongst the relief corps when you've got guys who are getting a lot of money, and perhaps that means that the other middle relievers are expecting a little more as a result?
Sure, in some ways, yeah. But I think why that's happening is because, teams are figuring out better ways to quantify what contributions are in terms of wins and how that impacts the team. And the more you can do that and find inefficiencies or efficiencies, that's when the market shifts a little bit. So when you're having to pay, X for a starting pitcher and you can pay Y for a relief pitcher, sometimes it just comes down to what you have and what your resources are. So I think that's driven up those prices for relievers, and that will make it more difficult to build out bullpens. But I also think that there's a reason that hasn't happened in the past,
mm-hmm.
and that's because of the volatility of bullpen arms. It seems to be that bullpen arms and bullpens across the major leagues are improving, and there are a lot of things to look at that way, but the sample size isn't great of successful relievers with those big contracts actually contributing to those levels. So, again, because of the volatility, it's such an interesting discussion because of how those guys get used when they're doing so well,
mm-hmm.
right? There's just – when they're hot, they're pitching. And you look up at the guys that have the ridiculous numbers of appearances and innings and the workload and – you know, how long can that hold up for a guy? And so you don't typically see a guy that's getting those types of deals that didn't just have that workload, right? That's how they got the deal.
Sure. Yeah,
so that's a difficult balance.
Oh yeah, it's like it's a double-edged sword. You're giving money to the guy because he's worked a lot, but in the process, you're going to work him a lot. And in your heart of hearts, you know at some point that something's going to snap, or just he's just going to lose effectiveness. I mean, it's a difficult thing. That's why I asked, because to me, it would make the job. I mean, Ross, I've covered enough baseball. I'm used to teams bringing 50 guys in and saying, yeah, you know, here's our closer. We'll figure out the other five guys by the end of spring training. And you can't do that anymore.
No, you can't. I've never believed that's the best way. I mean, I think you've probably heard enough that I have so much respect for players. And so when you tell someone that they have a legitimate chance to make a team, it needs to be legitimate. So that's where I feel like you really have to have strong reasons and rationale to believe why you feel these individuals have a great chance to make your team, as opposed to let's just throw as many out there and see who's hot. Then you end up making a spring training decision, right? And then those are never good either. So,
both you and Mark last night were fairly optimistic. I know Mark doesn't necessarily like using that word. I've asked him about it in the past. But there seems to be a tone or a change in discussion about certainly getting Josh Donaldson signed to a multi-year deal and getting Jose Bautista re-signed. At least I've kind of detected that. I know that you guys are in the process, various stages with these guys, so I'm not going to ask you for details. But I will ask you this, Ross. You've been here 2 months now. Are you more confident of getting something done? We'll start with Josh and then Jose. But are you more confident of getting a multi-year deal done with Josh now than you were, let's say, a month ago?
To be honest with you, Jeff, the only reason that I'm not necessarily more confident, I just have a better feel for their interest and needs.
Okay.
So it doesn't, you know, listen, those are huge, huge commitments and challenges that are extremely complex, and there's two sides. And we have to, and I've communicated this to the players, we have to do what's in the best interest of the long term of the Blue Jays and try to do the same for every player.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you can agree upon that, and other times those values don't fit. So that has not changed. We haven't closed any gaps that way.
Okay.
But, you know, what I do have a better feel for is, you know, our organization, our team, and our desire for them to be on it. And that is what's increased as we've gotten to know them. Now, the likelihood of us acquiring has not increased, but our desire has only increased.
You guys were able to, when you were in Cleveland, the organization was able to get a deal done with Corey Kluber, and he was a guy, kind of a late bloomer, you know, Cy Young Award at the age of 28. In some ways, I know different positions and different ages with Donaldson, but again, another late bloomer, wins an MVP award. Because he's a late bloomer, you know, he's farther away from free agency than other guys. You guys are really creative with Kluber's contract. Can you... Again, not to negotiate publicly, but would it take that type of thing to get something done with Josh where, I don't know if you'd call them escalator clauses, whatever, there are things in the contract that give him a little more at the back end based on performance?
Yeah, you know, absolutely sign me up. Any creativity, anything that helps bridge a gap, anything that makes sense for both parties. I mean, I can't say it enough. I'm sure it's crystal clear to you that I believe in win-win, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to win a negotiation. I want the player to feel good about it. I want us to feel good about it. I have a good deal for both sides. So that's hard to do. But the creativity, not having policies and rules, not having things and restrictions that prevent you from do that, I'm all for. Mark is all for. Because ultimately, I would hate to miss out on any opportunities for a lack of flexibility.
Right.
But, you know, I think they're a little bit in different categories. You know, great analogy. And, you know, I think the challenges are a little bit different, a little bit more unique. But, man, that is absolutely how we will approach it. And I'm glad you asked that.
Last question before we let you run. Spring training, as I said, is just around the corner, Ross. Those of us who have been to spring training for the past few years, what difference will we notice? I know Gibby and the staff is still there, same staff, but will there be a different, will there be some logistical differences to spring training under, you know, with you and Mark there, as opposed to what we may have seen in the past?
You know, I'm still learning about what was. And I, you know, what will be, I think I'm looking to complement, not make wholesale changes. So I think some of the changes you will see that are clear will be in resources. So sports psychologists, director of sports science, a team of strength and conditioning coaches working with the medical staff, working with the trainers that are led by a director of high performance, bringing on physical therapists, bringing on nutritionists, changing the way that our players are fed and hydrated and how we're paying attention to them to help them get on the field on a regular basis. I think you, anyone that has been around the camp will be able to see those things. I guess it depends on how much time you're spending in and right. around inside of them. But, you know, and then I think a little bit philosophically, you know, probably not in time spent, but I don't know, you know, the ins and outs of what was, but my philosophy on what I think is important and Mark's philosophy on what is important is including players in the process. So not mandating, not evaluating, but asking, how can we help you? What can we clarify? What do you need from us? How can we get better to give you the best possible chances to be great? And so those are what our meetings and tone, that's what our time spent is focused on. And of course, there's going to be times where we're focused on contracts and that, but that is a, you know, that's not the fun part. That's not, I mean, it's interesting, invigorating, and has good energy, but the fun part is helping players and connecting players and having a player development background. That's what I've always been focused on, is breaking down that barrier, is that we are here for you. There is no other reason. We're not here to build a team and just watch it go out on the field and play. We're here to help support you be great and realize all of your potential. So that's what we get fulfillment from.
Ross, it was great of you to join us today. Thanks so much. We'll do this again.
All right, Jeff. Thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it.
Take care. It's Ross Atkins, general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. I think we're going to like him, folks. I'll tell you what. If a guy can name drop Marco Scudero, and I've written this, if a guy can name drop Marco Scudero, then I'm 100% behind that guy, because Marco Scudero, anybody who's played with him, who covered him, has been around him, Marco Scudero might be one of the, I wouldn't say great teammates. He was well regarded as an important guy on good teams. An important guy in diverse teams. He was a huge player in that San Francisco Giants World Series. Huge. Absolutely significant, in some ways irreplaceable for that team. And, you know, he and Ross Atkins are close. And I'll tell you, I'm just going to say this, and I don't know, but I'd be willing to bet that Marco Scudero is in this organization in some capacity in the next 2 years. But no idea why. Haven't been tipped off. But if that's the case, it's just another reason to feel pretty good about this front office. Interesting, I think Ross Atkins, it's pretty clear that the five-year contract limit is not carved in stone anymore. Thank the good Lord for that. And most importantly, even if it exists, don't tell people it exists. So that's a step in the right direction. And as you heard in my conversation with Ross Atkins, these are two guys, Shapiro in particular, they've been creative in the past. They've been part of front offices in the past that have come up with some creative answers to, as he says, bridge the gap between what a player wants and what a club's willing to offer. So I said this time and again, and y'all know how much I love Alex Anthopoulos. I mean, I don't even think I have to say that anymore. Something tells me the odds of getting a deal with Josh Donaldson done are better with Shapiro and Atkins than they were with Alex. And that's not meant as a slight for Alex. It's just because Alex was certainly not afraid to be creative. But I just got a feeling about this. And to me, you know, the decision of Batista and Encarnacion, it's a lot easier. It's not easier to get done, but it's easier to make a decision on that than it is to Donaldson. to make a decision on Donaldson. It's easier to kind of, I mean, Bautista's just basically going to be money and term. Donaldson, there's a bunch of other stuff you got to work into. It's money and term, but you have to look at it a little differently because of his age, because he's a late bloomer, you know, because of the position he plays. So, I mean, I got, at some point in the last 48 hours, and maybe this was Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins, maybe it was a conscious decision, in which case, good on them. At some point in the last 48 hours, 72 hours, we went from thinking, well, they might get something with Donaldson done, probably not going to get anything with Bautista or Encarnacion done, to now I'm getting the sense that maybe Batista's doable. You know, maybe Bautista, or at least there's some consideration being given to the fact that maybe Jose Bautista isn't necessarily that guy who's going to fall off the cliff at the age of 35, 36. He does take good care of his body. I mean, Jose Bautista will tell you he's in better shape now than he was 5 years ago. So maybe, you know, maybe there's a possibility there. I don't, like I said, the discourse, the tone of the discussion changed in the last 72 hours. And we appreciate Ross Atkins joining us. Jory Mittelstadt is co-host of The Bottom Line, presented by BetDSI, Sundays from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Wasn't there a TV show called BetDSI? No, I guess there wasn't. He'll join us. And Clint Irwin, Toronto FC goalkeeper, he'll be along at 11:40. Guy's from Carolina. He's got to be a Carolina Panthers fan. But I know this about Clint Irwin as well. Dude played high school basketball with Steph Curry. I wonder if he ever saw the ball. Is Steph Curry strike is the type of guy who distributed the ball? We'll find out. All that ahead in the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.